testing works.
I certainly agreed with Lyman and with Ed that we should make no deal with CSC, that we wanted in the Science Institute people who were the best scientists, not necessarily people who had had a lot of experience in writing NASA, successful NASA proposals. So we made a conscious decision, and it appears, and it seems to me that that was the decisive decision that led to the success of the R proposal, because they relied heavily on professionals, people who dedicated themselves to writing the proposal, were experienced in writing proposals, who knew what NASA wanted, and they had some astronomers who worked full-time on it, and they had professionals familiar with what NASA needed to, or wanted, or judged by, to help them write the proposal. We didn't. And that was a conscious decision, and I think led to, inevitably, to the great disparity in the quality of the proposals as viewed by NASA.
Did you consider hiring CSC on a simply a consultant basis, or would they not be hired that way?
Well, first of all, they then went with the best offer outside of Princeton, but we generally felt that we could do a better job than hired guns. Although my role at that time was very minimal, the principal role in the compilation and drawing up of the details of the proposal was the largest role was played by Ed Groth, but also by Lyman, and at AUI by these two AUI employees. Do you remember those two guys?
I remember.
Well, there's the guy who's the treasurer, who's still the treasurer today, and one of the, and the other, both of those guys are still there.
One is named Victor Bremenkamp.
Vic Bremenkamp, and the other guy is the treasurer.
His name is it Amthor?
Yeah, Carl Amthor. And they took everything, we provided only first drafts, and they rewrote everything, not necessarily showing it to us. And they were the ultimate people responsible for the AUI Princeton proposal. And Lyman was not allowed to see anything except the first drafts which he prepared, and because he was involved with other proposals.
Yes.
And I think the same was probably true of Ed. I was not allowed to see anything but perhaps I was allowed to see the science part, but perhaps not the management part, because I hadn't contributed significantly to that. But those people were the dominant people, and I complained somewhat to the AUI authorities that it seemed to me that there ought to be more decisive involvement by the scientists, but they felt that Carl and Vic could do a better job, given our divided loyalties, than we could have.
Was Bremenkamp an astronomer?
No. Vic had a background in science, but not in astronomy.
Basically an AUI administrator.
Yeah, and so was Carl. Carl, I believe, was treasurer.
There were two steps to the process, and the first one was that you proposed to various consortia, I believe.
That's right.
And
at that stage, I had a big role.
Yeah.
I had my role diminished because I was very heavily involved in science during the period of the proposal writing, and I had practically nothing to do with proposal writing. I wrote very few paragraphs, few sections.
What was your goal in writing this proposal of a Princeton site to the various consortia? You wanted to convince them, obviously, but, I mean, to whom did you address your proposal?
Well, we wrote it as we would have written a proposal to NSF, to science colleagues. that was the audience that we were considering. And I think the things that we wrote subsequent to that, as a response to the AO, certainly the things that I wrote, were largely addressed to our to an audience which would have been our colleagues, not necessarily the people that were actually reading the proposal.
Was it true that most of those who were reading, though, had some, at least some scientific background, and in some cases were themselves working astronomers?
No, I believe not. I believe there was at, I went down, I remember once being at headquarters and making the statement to Noel Henners that we should make a big stink about, we should try to change the constitution of the selection group, and certainly the chairman, because, as it was later quoted to me, there was no working astronomer, or no one on the board who had published a paper in astronomy in the last 10 years. That was what was quoted back to me, or some statement like that, last 5 years. And in fact, Bob O'Dell called me and called me to task at that, because he said he had written a few papers in the last 5 or 10 years, and he was on the board, but practically no one else had.
You're talking about the source evaluation
board? Source evaluation board. Jesse was there as a visitor, but a non-voting just to see that everything was done in a proper fashion, and so he could certify to the community afterwards that it was done in a fair way. But he was not an active, he didn't vote.
Did you know in advance who was on the source evaluation board?
Yes.
Before even the proposals went in?
That I don't know. Probably, yes, I think we did before the proposals went in. I think that's right.
That brings me, makes me jump ahead in my questions, but brings me to a question. Did you find that this process was easy or hard to deal with, of preparing and defending a proposal? Now I'm talking about the proposal to NASA, and so, as you pointed out, a lot of it is aura, but you had some role in figuring it out, too, and so I wonder what your feeling was.
Well, no, my role was really pretty minimal at the time that the proposals were being written in response to EAO. My role was major at the time that we were trying to sell the proposal to our colleagues, science colleagues.
Okay. When you were trying to do that, was that before the EAO went out?
Yeah. Before, or certainly before the AO, for the responses, before the various groups had, consortia had decided upon which site. I played a major role in trying to persuade various consortia and groups that Princeton was the best place for them to propose. I played a relatively minor role in the Princeton proposals, in the proposals by the consortia proposing Princeton as the site.
Okay. Subsequently, the AO.
Not, you know, enormously minor, but certainly well below the role played by their administrators and by Lyman and Ed.
Uh-huh.
That's certainly my perception of it. Maybe Lyman and Ed have a different form perception, but my feeling is that, let's say, even somebody like Ed Jenkins played a bigger, not conceptual role, but certainly contributed more material to those proposals than I did.
I think you're talking mostly now about writing up the proposal.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Still, there had to be some kind of interaction, maybe on a day-to-day basis, with the consortium, with AUI. Let us take before you. Yeah, one example. Is that true or not, Ani? That you had day-to-day interaction with AUI?
Yeah, certainly. Certainly I had, I don't know if day-to-day, but frequent interaction with AUI, and I would give my opinions about things. I don't know if you've discussed with the AUI people that were around at the time, but, you know, they...
John Team.
No, John Team is Aura.
I'm sorry. Jerry Tape.
Jerry Tape and Bob, what's his name now? The present president.
Hughes.
Bob Hughes. Both more involved in the AUI.
We have not spoken with Hughes, but we have with Tate.
So, I mean, if you've asked him about my role, you know what my role was.
I haven't. My colleague has.
Okay.
So I wondered if maybe you could just say. I know,
tell me what you know. It'll simplify for me.
Well, I know that what I'm interested in is this period after AUI had decided that it would take Princeton and before it submitted the proposal to NASA, when AUI was preparing the proposal, how much of the philosophy, the attitudes that are in that proposal reflected your opinions, your positions?
Well, certainly anything that differed strongly with my position, I would have fought about. But I wasn't terribly interested in the details. I think I regarded it in the same way that I regarded science proposals, that it didn't really much matter what you said, that they looked at who you are and what you've done and decided on that basis. And so I said, okay, let Lyman and Ed do that. And, you know, I think that Princeton will do just fine because, you know, we're so desirable.
Yeah.
And I didn't worry about the details. I was happy to go and do science. But on matters of philosophy, which I've discussed with Lyman, there's one particular matter which I've discussed with Lyman at my initiative several times since, on which I strongly disagreed with him and told him that the Institute for Advanced Study would not participate if it were not changed in his draft. And that was, Lyman had in his initial draft, which he circulated to all three consortia that proposed Princeton, that for the first few years of the Science Institute, the employees would not do any research in exchange for being allowed to work there. And I said I simply wouldn't support that, and that if he wanted to propose that, he would have to propose it without the Institute for Advanced Study, because that was not consistent with my concept of a Science Institute.
Right.
So, you know, when I felt strongly about something, I really insisted on it, and he changed it. In retrospect, he was just putting down on paper what was almost inevitable, at least, certainly under the present situation.
But is it not true also that in retrospect, you would have been faulted more for that, because they faulted you for not having enough science?
I don't know, but did they fault us for not having?
Yes.
I see.
Did you see the debriefing? Did you go to the debriefing afterwards?
No, I did not go to the debriefing.
Did you see the letter to AUI regarding the debriefing?
Yes, I'm sure I did.
And there were four points of weakness, and one of them was not enough resources devoted to research.
I see.
It's rather humorous. Now, of course, the two aren't, they're orthogonal. They're not necessarily contradictory. You could have said that everyone has to do service for the first 3 years, but we'll still have half of our staff devoted to research in the long run.
Yeah. I don't know. I think Lyman was being very realistic.
Yeah. Might that have? Well, it's not for you to answer unless you better. I mean, you wish to, of course. I would think that by saying that, it might have made the management part of the proposal looked like it was being taken more seriously. Let me pose that another way. Do you think that NASA was concerned that these apparent weaknesses in the management structure indicated a lack of interest in management?
I really don't know. All I'm convinced of, in short, with regard to the decision, is that it was fair, that it was not close, that on the basis of the criteria which NASA laid down, we were not competitive, and I believe that we would have won had we hired first-rate professionals like CSC by giving them a significant fraction of the contract.
You believe you would have won had you done that?
Yeah, because I think, you know, the difference between, we had greater natural advantages than John Hopkins. So they won by having a better organization. I don't think ARO was perceived as being a better organization at the time than AUI. I think just the opposite, but they didn't have the professional NASA support, NASA knowledgeable support.
There's one related to this. I at the time the proposal was written, the expected launch date was 1983.
Yeah.
And that meant that there was very little time to get an institute operating to support it. And I believe I've seen view graphs of your own in your files that indicate you were worried that there's not enough time.
Maybe I don't remember that.
My question really is, do you recall if the shortness of time was noted and affected was noted in and affected the form of the proposal to NASA?
I'm sure it did, but I don't remember the specifics.
Okay. I think I'll have to ask Tape and Hughes then. Who was the principal person at ORA who handled it, at AUI? Was it Tape?
Well, Jerry handled it more on a day-to-day basis, but Bob Hughes was... Bob Hughes was very informed. Bob Hughes would have had to control it if it had been won by AUI. So Jerry was the man that got it started, but Bob was the man who would have had to continue it, and they were both well informed.
Let's see. There were three other consortia or three other organizations: USRA, URA, and Battelle.
Yes.
And Princeton ended up being mentioned on two of those three. I've forgotten which one it was not.
Well, let's see. Battelle chose Princeton.
Yeah.
Is it USRA is the Fermilab? Then there was the Lunar Science Institute type people, Dessler's group. That also chose Princeton. Then there was the Fermilab, for which their science group...
That's URA. Fermilab is URA.
Fermilab is URA. USRA and Battelle chose Princeton in addition to AUI.
Yeah.
URA chose Princeton, that is, their science group chose Princeton, but their Board of Trustees overruled their scientist, and which we thought just killed their proposal, because their science committee recommended us, and then for parochial reasons, their Board of Trustees, but for valid reasons, they felt they ought to have something in the Midwest. They overruled their scientist. Then ORA chose John Hopkins over Princeton in a close ballot.
Yes. Okay. Actually, you raised the main point. ORA chose Johns Hopkins knowing it was weak, if not non-existent, in astronomy.
Yes.
They therefore had an alternate strategy, consciously chosen, in their proposal.
Which one?
One has to assume, which was that they would not emphasize the environment and scientific excellence, but rather something else.
Yeah.
Question is, have you been able to figure out what that something else was since then?
My attitude toward things like this is that you don't look backwards. So I... when it was accessible to me, I didn't read our proposal.
Would you ever do something like a proposal for a big organization like this again?
Sure. I mean, first of all, I didn't personally invest a lot of time in the actual writing, so that was fine with me. I did my thing. But the Space Telescope is such a wonderful and exciting and important project that yes, I'd be, if there were ever a project which seemed to me as important and as exciting as Space Telescope, I'd be willing to be involved with it, be delighted to. Why is that amusing?
So I ask you again, what was the second reason you thought you did that the proposal was not successful?
Well, the first reason I think we didn't make an arrangement with a professional group like CSC to help write and shape the proposal in exchange for a major part of the contract. That I think would have, somebody who really knew how NASA wanted AOs written. That was the major reason our proposal was less good than ours. A secondary reason I think was that we made the conscious decision that we would let anybody who wanted to propose, we would support anybody who wanted to propose Princeton, and there would give our support to any of those groups. That was one of the reasons why Aura did not choose us, even though the balloting was close between us and John Hopkins, because they quite rightfully perceived that our support would be diffuse and our loyalties divided, at best, among the many groups that were proposing Princeton. There were at least three other groups at that time who were going to propose Princeton, so they there were only so many hours a day, they figured they wouldn't get more than their small share. I think that was a tactical mistake. We should have, if we were primary, but you know, as a matter, I still believe that the two principles that we used in making these decisions were correct. Namely, I believe that the Science Institute should have been shaped by scientists, yes, primarily, and not by people whose major expertise is in writing NASA contracts. And I also believe that we were correct in saying that we should provide support to anybody who wanted to, who felt that our scientific environment was the best for the Space Telescope Science Institute, that that was our, both of those were the, were in the best interest of astronomy in principle.
Yeah.
In practice, I think they worked out they worked out to the disadvantage of the Princeton location, and decisively so.
It's a little bit of a contradiction. You said earlier that you put in a proposal, basically, what you think will sell within the larger constraints of what you want to do. You're willing to have the proposal go in, not pay too much attention to the details of writing it. Would it not have been possible to have a proposal that would be more attractive to NASA, but still was within the constraints of those two principles you just described?
Yeah, well, first of all, when I said attractive widely, I think that the proposal that we wrote and the parts to which I contributed were mainly addressed to our colleagues, not to not to operations,
of course,
people,
yes,
or management people.
That is the proposal you wrote to the organizations which would then propose to NASA.
Yeah, and that's and at that stage I did have a major role. And you know, just my attitude toward proposals in the past, I think, was not appropriate for this competition.
You did get some assistance from an outside organization on a sort of time available basis, I guess it was, or as you needed them basis. And that's the OAO company, I believe.
I believe that after it became apparent that CSC had a major role in the AURA proposal, AUI responded by getting some help from this OAO or whatever it was. I forget what they were called.
Yeah.
But I never met anybody there. Maybe I did, but it was just briefly. I never had any serious interaction with them. They provided help to Frick Bremenkamp and to Carl Amthor, but not to us.
Would you have preferred to be with AURA if you had only one choice? Prefer to be with AURA than AUI?
No.
So your decision for going for a multitude of organizations could simply have been, you might simply have narrowed down to AUI. Was there one in particular you really wanted to go with?
I remember that discussions among us suggested to us that AUI had done a better job of administration of its national laboratories than AURA had. And that was more or less institutional in the way the board of trustees for AURA was. It was so diffuse, so many people, a large number of university administrators, and it just seemed like a cumbersome administrative tool. So I think we were favorably disposed to AUI, but we made the conscious decision not to go for anybody because we felt that we shouldn't choose a consortium. That should be chosen by NASA on the basis of their management ability.
Yeah.
And otherwise it would be us choosing, and we felt that that was not the responsible thing for us to do.
Huh. understand that Johns Hopkins people played a fairly strong, big role in helping to write the Aura proposal. And you didn't, as you have described.
Well, certainly, we are in Princeton, the loyalties and time were distributed among three groups, and I in particular did not play a particularly big role in any of those. Maybe in the philosophy, perhaps, it's difficult for me to judge and remember, but certainly not in the writing.
Okay. Did you have any, how much effort did you have to take to convince your colleagues at Princeton that there should be a Space Telescope Science Institute here at all?
Well, at the university, it was a fairly easy thing to do, and we
received. That's what I heard.
At the Institute for Advanced Study, there were some questions about it. And some misunderstanding, I think in part because the director didn't spend enough time to really figure out what was involved, and sort of ran with the ball himself. But once that source of, once the correct information was in the hands of the faculty here, I think it went very smoothly. I did, of course, talk to personally, essentially every faculty member about it, and explain to them what was involved.
Mm-hmm. Were there any strong voices of dissent even after you spoke to them?
Not strong, puzzled voices. They wanted, there was one mathematics colleague of mine, who is still a colleague today, who wondered why the Institute for Advanced Studies should be, who asked me, first of all, is it true that many of the theories which this telescope will test may not be correct? And when I pointed out to him, yes, that was one of the main exciting things that we were concerned with, he wondered if the Institute should be in that business at all, because shouldn't we be in the business of just concentrating on things which were true? Why should we be concerned with things which might not be true?
That's curious.
Yes, I found that interesting. In fact, he's a very pleasant and extremely productive mathematician, and he called me one day and invited me out to coffee to discuss this problem, because he was puzzled about it. Why should the Institute be in the business of concerning itself with theories which might not be true?
Wow. I don't know enough about mathematics to even wonder why. I mean, to even propose, to even ask how he's thinking. It doesn't. I can wonder why, but do you know why?
Yeah, I think I understand him, but oh. I think we straightened it out.
I mean, is this true? Never mind. I won't ask. Yeah, I will ask. Let's see. Okay, maybe I could just ask a couple more questions about Princeton. How much effort did you make to get the New Jersey political establishment behind the Princeton bid? I've seen some correspondence in which Board of Education promises a certain amount of support for the Space Telescope Science Institute when and if it comes to Princeton.
And we had a breakfast meeting with the governor and some business leaders and that sort of thing.
Did it have any effect on
the
outcome? No,
I don't think so.
Why did you do it? I mean, why did you seek the support?
Well, I thought it might be a useful fillip in the proposal.
Addressed to whom? Who would care?
Whoever read it would care that there was a state or other authorities who were backing the proposal and would see that we were rounding up support for the Science Institute wherever we could, so it would be more prominent, better supported, have a wider audience and a greater generality of effect.
Did this reflect perhaps a concern that there might be some political forces in general coming to bear on the decision?
No, I think that the decision, we did everything we could, and everybody I know who was closely involved did everything they could to see that there were no political forces brought to bear at the time of the decision, because we felt that if there were, it would be disastrous for astronomy. It would go to some place which had absolutely no relation to astronomy.
On the other hand, if you were already convinced that politics might enter, you would want to defend in favor of astronomy.
Yeah, but we weren't convinced, and it never did. To the best of my knowledge, politics played no role at all in the decision.
Okay.
That's not a universally held opinion in Princeton, but it's my very strong opinion. There are some people in Princeton who can't understand how you can choose any place outside of Princeton for reasons other than, you know, for any objective reason.
That reminds me, did the data and operations part of the proposal get considered fairly, in your opinion, by the SEB?
Well, my opinion, the SEB did a completely fair job on all aspects of the proposal.
Was the data and operations, you said you didn't read the ORA proposal?
No, and I probably didn't read the Princeton, large parts of the Princeton proposal either.
One person suggested that if the data and operations part of it had been considered, it was probably in the mode of subtraction rather than an addition. Princeton said how data and operations would be handled. The ORA proposal had how they would study how the data and operations would be handled. And I wondered if that figured in the discussions at all.
Well, again, you know, I have no contact with that phase of the proposal.
Okay, I did want to go to one other thing. A couple of other things, actually. There were, at one point, Noel Hinners offered to visit not only here but several other places when the Institute was being discussed, the idea back in 76. And I wondered if he ever did come here and look around.
Noel came here to give a talk, but it was not in, he emphasized it had nothing to do with the Science Institute. He was here as on the visiting board for the geology department.
I see. But this was an offer made to, in fact, to discuss the Institute, but well before any AO was put out. And so the point was that he could freely discuss it with potential sites. You recall if he did?
Oh, we saw him frequently enough, and he was here.
Uh-huh.
His mother-in-law lives here.
Yeah.
So we saw him frequently enough, whether he ever did something specifically in that context, I don't know.
I see. Frosch came in 79, November 79, and there was an interesting article in the Newark Star Ledger, and they asked him about his whether this bode well for Princeton. He said that it really didn't have anything to do with it. He was only giving it a talk, and that this was not a site visit.
Yes, I remember that. I had dinner with him that night.
Well, they also said, I believe that some Princeton people met with him. Did you? Do you know?
I had dinner with him.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry. I meant as a sort of a separate business meeting. Anyway.
I do remember the dinner. I don't remember I don't remember much more than that.
Did you talk about the Institute at the time?
Don't remember what we talked about.
Do you know if there was any criticism that followed from his from this article, which looked rather funny. That is to say, he was, after all, visiting Princeton, even though he said it wasn't a site visit, and it just didn't make a whole lot of sense on the face of it. I wondered if there was any repercussion that way.
Certainly no criticism in Princeton. No,
certainly not. The headline of the article was, "Princeton's chances increase with visit of NASA administrator," or something like that.
Yeah, well, he didn't make...
I mean, it was... From my point of view, it was, for anybody reading it, it was nothing but the newspaper overstating its hopes.
Right.
Okay. I want... there was one other thing, too, which I haven't asked you about, but I wanted to talk about the question of directorship of the Institute, and... do that, well, let's see, I mean, more or less on or off the tape, depending on what you want, but what I wanted to ask you is, there was a point at which I believe you were designated to be the future director for the Institute if AUI got the proposal.
That's right.
And
where did you find that out?
I can't say. Although I thought it was common, I thought it was public.
I believe it was public, but I have never volunteered that information. It certainly was known to a number of people because it was made as a result of there was a decision about it in the committee, an AUI committee. So it was communicated to people. So therefore, anything known by a few people is known by many people,
yeah.
I presume. But I've never really discussed it.
What I wondered about was if that had any effect on the consideration of the proposal.
No. That designation was made long after the SEB, had made, months after the SEB decision was made. That final decision was made only, final decision was communicated to me only a few days before the decision, Frosch's decision, was announced. And as you remember, his decision was announced, was delayed until almost the time he left office.
Huh.
And I believe AUI had planned to delay their announcement until after they found out whether they, to delay their public announcement until find out if they won the competition or not. There was no point in making an announcement if they didn't win the competition. But they got into this press that they had a board meeting, which was just a short time before Frosch was to leave office. Frosch had to make a decision before he left office.
Yeah.
They couldn't delay till their next board meeting because then they wouldn't have they wouldn't be able to talk to whoever they designated as director. So they made a formal decision reluctantly. They made the public decision only reluctantly just before Frosch was to leave office because he had forced their hand. But there was a time at which one of the SEB members told me that, informally, that AUI could do well by announcing that they had made a director's choice, if it was a choice which would strongly appeal to the SEB.
Yeah.
But that did not happen. And I think the AUI did a good administrative job on that.
There was an acting director in the proposal. I think it was Tape was named as acting director.
Either Tape, or maybe it was Carl Amthor. Was it Carl Amthor?
Well, no, I saw Tape in the mention, but I wasn't sure whether it was whether he was named in the proposal or not. But he was mentioned in the debriefing letter.
Well, that I don't know. The plan was that Carl Amthor would come to Princeton, either Carl or Vic, I forget who, and live here for the first year or something. And they would have been the principal AUI on-site person.
And
by the way, I'm not sure that Lyman knows, for example, that I was the AUI designee. Does he?
Yeah, I think so.
I see. Because he and I never discussed it. He discussed with me his ambitions, but I must say I didn't reciprocate.
That sort of opens up a whole series of questions that are of interest, but maybe not for this purpose. One question is, though, I have looked at the organization as AUI proposed it, and there are two very strong second positions there, second and third, in effect. One of them is associate director for, I believe it's research and support.
I tell you, I really didn't pay attention.
One of them is a management associate directorship, and the other was a scientific associate directorship.
Yeah.
And in fact, the scientific associate directorship was someone really to make sure that the scientific life of the place was great, was viable. And I wondered if there were considerations for that position already, since that would be an important one. And also for the third position.
Well, I personally had not made any such decisions in my mind. I had, for the previous year, as my family will tell you, really stewed over whether it was the appropriate thing for me to do or not. And it is not clear what I would have done. Let's put it this way, it was certainly not clear to me that I would, at that time, have taken the job. By no means. I certainly wouldn't have given it more than 50% in my mind at that time. It may have been true that I would have certainly have done it. I think that's Netta's conviction. But Netta, for example, during that whole time, never would express an opinion as to whether I should do it or not do it, nor would she express an opinion as to whether or not I would do it if I were offered the job. So for me, it was premature to have made any such judgments about other people.
You asked, or you phrased it in terms of appropriate, whether you thought it was appropriate for you to do it. What would have been an attraction to the position for you?
Excitement, difference from what I'm doing now, the importance of the project, the conviction that I could do a really excellent job, the opportunity for creating an organization from the start which would be excellent in science and would make a major impact on our scientific life of the country. That was a real challenge, and I felt I could do it well. It was just that I loved doing science, and it wasn't clear to me that I wanted to make the personal and scientific sacrifices that would be necessary to do that administrative job.
It strikes me that if you took that job, you would almost be forsaking science as you do it now.
Yeah, that's no doubt about it. Well, that's why it was such a, it never came to that problem.
Right. The decision you mentioned was made by Frosch to choose Ora. The SEB had made a recommendation before, which presumably was the same thing.
Yes, identical.
I may have said a day before, but do you know what the timing was? Was it a couple of days or?
No, I think it was in Frosch's office for quite a while.
Uh-huh. So, is it fair to say that you were probably designated as director after the SEB had made its recommendation against AUI?
That's right, but not within AUI's knowledge, because they had been holding off, to the best of my knowledge. Their intention was, and I think correctly, not to designate anybody until they found out whether they won or not. But there was this problem that their board had this meeting, which was going to come before Frosch resigned, but it was then going to be a long time after he resigned and must make his decision before they would meet again, and so they had to make that formal decision before.
Do you think AUI really thought they would be chosen? I mean, in a
yes.
Yeah. In a very strong sense.
I think they were very surprised. I think we all in Princeton were astonished.
Were there any advance hints that you would or would not be selected?
None. It was very well kept secret. It was known that one of the finalists, known first of all in the early stages of the five, that one of the proposers was very much ahead of everybody else. And again, it was known that in the stage of the finalists that one of the proposers was very much ahead of the others.
Huh.
But we all in Princeton assumed it was Princeton. I don't know if Aura assumed it was Aura or not. We in Princeton assumed it was Princeton.
Okay, so you were surprised. Were you? How did you first find out?
I was called by somebody at John Hopkins. What's his name? The X-ray astronomer, not X-ray, the ultraviolet astronomer. Art Davidson called me.
Yeah.
Art Davidson called me.
That's not the way to hear, is it?
Oh, well, it was as good a way as any. Art is a good friend. I admire his science very much and admire him as a person very much. And we were... Art had said that he would like to come to Princeton and work in the Science Institute here if Princeton won. And, you know, he called to express... We had had good... working relations all along, didn't cause any problems between us. Art strongly proposed me for director. I mean, he sent me a copy of the letter, I don't know if you've seen it, that he wrote to Margaret Burbidge, proposing me for director under the Aura proposal. So we were good friends, and I knew all of his science. Almost I'd rather hear from him than anybody else. But I must say, for that day in Princeton, I was the most relieved person in Princeton. You know, Jerry was very concerned, Jerry Ostreicher was very concerned about Lyman,
yeah.
And that make sure that I spoke to him in the right way. Netta was absolutely crushed, and everybody was surprised. But there was this terrible dilemma, science or no science, and suddenly it was an irrelevant question.
But Art Davidson must have called you thinking that you knew.
Yes, Art called me thinking I knew.
The way it is. So NASA hadn't told you. Did NASA tell you shortly thereafter?
I don't remember.
Yeah.